We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
It's Tuesday, August 31st. I'm Jeff Schwartz alongside Gabe Goodwin. This is Jeff Schwartz of Smarter Than You. This week, we are wrapping up the preseason by checking back in on quarterback battles, including Trey Lance, Mac Jones, and the Deshaun Watson trade rumors. We'll have some fun with over-unders as usual. And I am glad, Gabe, that we have made it through the preseason and it's time to get to some real football. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing very well. And you say we made it through the preseason, and this was like a little bit of a shock to the system for some of us. Without us realizing, the preseason is three games now. So, you know, we're used to having the fourth game be the meaningless game and the third game. But now my calibration is way off.
And the third game, which just ended for most teams, I mean, every team this past weekend, starters did play for a lot of teams. Like, for example, right. The Giants played their starters the most they had all of the postseason, all the preseason. The Chiefs kind of were in and out, right? Chiefs played a couple. Joe Burrow played a couple snaps. Baker Mayfield, played some snaps. And now we're ending in cutdown days, which is always tough. But this used to happen Labor Day weekend, right? The final game used to always be the Thursday before Labor Day. Now that weekend, which is coming up in just a couple of days, is filled with college football. Cuts are happening now. Teams are trimming their rosters down. Never fun to be released. I've been released three times. I was released as a rookie to go on practice squad. It's a weird feeling. They tell you, hey, we're going to cut you, but we want you back on practice squad. And you sit in your hotel room for 24 hours seeing if someone will claim you. If they claim you, then you go to the other team. If not, you're back on practice squad. But even with the idea of, hey, I'm either back on practice squad or I'm being claimed, so I'll have a job, it's still not fun to sit there for 24 hours in a hotel room thinking, like, is this it for my career? As much as they claim I'm coming back, you never really know. So I feel bad for a lot of players today whose NFL dreams could be coming to an end. It's always a tough couple of days. There's injuries and whatnot, and so players will be able to find their way back on the rosters.
Well, we'll come back to that because that's sort of one caliber of player and an interesting topic. The other caliber of player, we're not worried about Trey Lance or Jimmy G being cut. We're just trying to figure out which of these guys is actually going to be Kyle Shanahan's starter. It's kind of hard to tell even after this final preseason game. He was rotating between two guys who he hasn't yet named as his week one starter. Everyone is making a case for the rookie or the veteran. Colin Cowherd has had the most to say about Trey Lance of anyone all offseason. And even he said, I can't start Trey Lance. I don't know what to make of the preseason. And I think that's probably summing up how a lot of us feel. I don't know what to make of the numbers I saw. I don't know what to make of the reps these guys got. And I don't know what they're going to do in a couple weeks. Jeff, how about this? starting Trey Lance seems very reckless, knowing what we know currently.
Probably. Before we get to this, I want to talk about something you just said, which is what to take away from the preseason, because this is a discussion we always have, and I feel like we've gotten to a point where, as usual, social media has taken this far in one direction, right? Which is the direction of it does not matter at all. Preseason does not matter at all. Yeah. It's pointless. Why have it? Doesn't matter. Well, I mean, look, a lot of coaches have won a lot of football games and played a lot of their starters. You know, the Chiefs have played their starters a bunch. Bill Belichick has. Mike Tomlin, Ron Rivera, Kyle Shanahan. A lot of winning football coaches believe the preseason still has some value. So what do I take away from this? Obviously, individual matchups are easy to pinpoint, but often they're ones versus twos, twos versus ones, right? So it's hard to tell sometimes whether or not the one-on-one matchups you see are valuable to assessing whether the player can play or is ready to play in the preseason. Obviously, if a two is beating a one, that's very good. Or if a two is playing against a two, and we'll talk about Mac Jones in a second, he looked good against the twos, right? But now, obviously, can he look good against the ones is the question. But what I take away from the preseason is process. I'll give you a couple examples, okay? The Chiefs' offense played a bunch in the preseason, mostly because they have a new offensive line. And they looked freaking good, Gabe. The process of their offense looked like it should. They look like it should, right? Buffalo Bills, starters played a little bit. Guess what? Look like it should, right? The process looked like it should. And then on the flip side, you have the Vikings. Didn't score an offensive touchdown for the first 10 quarters of the preseason. Ugh, gross. Cardinals, right? Ugh, Cardinals, right? The process, we need to see more from their offense. Do we get more? I don't want to hear this when people will say, whoa, Jeff. They don't show anything in the preseason. You run your base offense. I mean, like, you show something, right? Andy Reid had a couple new plays. And, like, you tried to try some of this stuff out to start the season. And so you try it out in the preseason. But if you can't run your base offense well, you're not going to run your specialized plays very well. So I don't buy that idea they're not showing anything. That's what I said. No, Arizona looked their offense needing to improve. Kyler didn't play very much, but the offense didn't look very good. The Giants' offense looked like poo yesterday until they played the Patriots backups and scored a touchdown in the first half. So to me, it's about process, right? Is teams were looking to be better, especially offensively. Were they better in the preseason? No. So what makes you think they'd be better in the regular season? Teams are good on offense in the preseason, who we know would be good, look pretty good, probably be good in the regular season as well. So Gabe, that's what I take away from the preseason is process. And
well, but then what's been the process in San Fran? Because so, it's just splitting time.
Good question. So the way I look at it is the Niners know their window with Trey Lance has begun. Once you draft the quarterback, you trade the assets for him, he has to play sooner or later. But they don't trust him quite yet to play in a full offense. So what they're doing is they're breaking him in different situations to get him more comfortable playing in the NFL. We saw yesterday, obviously, they're rotating snaps in certain situations. It also makes the week one opponent, week two opponent, week three opponent have to study a little bit extra too, right? Oh my God, guys, we have to be ready for this play, be ready for that play. So it's a way to mess with the defensive coordinator. They have to spend extra time preparing for multiple packages. But what I really think it is, Gabe, is they're trying to find ways to get Lance as ready as possible, but also continue to win football games. Is it a great system? No. Because what's the saying? If you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure it's a great system, but I think Shanahan understands that if you put Lance in now, you might not do as much winning, and this team is very talented. This team can contend for the NFC. So we put Jimmy in there, and we rotate in Lance to get him some confidence, get him some game reps. He'll improve faster than taking no reps at all and being shoved in there week 5, 6, 7, whenever he's put in there. Plus, look, it's true. Preparing for a Trey Lance package where he's running the football, where you're running some of these quarterback run plays, that takes extra time for defense to do. It does. And if you can employ those in certain situations to your advantage, that's ideal. The problem I see, though, is, you know, it breaks up the rhythm of your current quarterback, right? If Jimmy G's having a good drive and you bring in Trey Lance, does that slow down Jimmy G's confidence, right? If he's had a bad drive, you put in Trey Lance, does that mess up his confidence? When do you put him in, when do you not put him? It just, there's a lot of twerking and variables they have to work through each game. I would imagine, Gabe, sooner or later they want Trey Lance to play, though, full time.
But this isn't about, they have a temporary problem to solve, And so they might do it by playing both guys. And we'll see this probably in New Orleans. We might see it a few places. It might be worth something them considering in Chicago with Fields and Dalton. But this is ultimately still about making sure you can get the most valuable value possible when you eventually trade Jimmy G, right? Like that we are trying to showcase Jimmy G getting off to a hot start, proving he can be somebody's starter and then moving him, right?
Who is going to take him though? I mean, you have to hope that that someone gets hurt. I mean, like that's the only hope for trading him right now. Who's going to take Jimmy G in the middle of the season?
Well, I don't really know the answer to that, but Sam Darnold looks like he could be a starting quarterback in the NFL. So I have hope for Jimmy G. You know, there's some guys starting sure. on decent teams in this league who yeah. are not better than him.
Yeah, but trading for him is going to be difficult unless you trade for him. Now, I just don't see him moving anywhere during the season.
But then they're just stuck with a guy they ultimately don't want to play yeah. who also costs a lot of money, and the best they can do is gimmick their quarterback spot.
But they knew this is what they were doing when they drafted him. Like they knew what they were getting into for this one season. Again, you have Lance on a rookie contract. He's very cheap. So you can get away with doing this for a year, probably at the most. Then you have to get rid of Jimmy Garoppolo and build up your team around Trey Lance.
All right. We saw this happen famously. Yep, I'm going to mention his name, but we don't have to talk about him. We saw Urban Meyer figure this out and win a national championship back with Chris Leake and Tim Tebow. It works in college. You can have two very different types of quarterbacks and be a winning team and just base it on the situation. Do you think that legitimately, you mentioned that it gives defensive coordinators fits to have to game plan against two different quarterbacks. Can you think of an example where an NFL team really had success doing this for 17 or 18 games and the postseason?
No, it doesn't happen in the NFL because you don't have time to work in these guys in practice.
Right.
You don't have time to make sure you game plan basically two separate game plans. And that's why, again, it's tough to sustain this all throughout the year. You want your guy to see something in the first quarter, first drive, and then come back in the third quarter, see the same thing, and get it right if they screwed up early on, right? You can't do that if you rotate guys in so much because it's something Trey Lance might see that Jimmy G doesn't see. And then Jimmy G gets that play later on, and he screws it up too, right? Because he has not seen Trey Lance, or really not seen the defense give him that look. And so, again, you want one guy to roll with, but I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to have it both ways, Gabe. Trying to win football games and prepare the young quarterback. But if it goes on too long, I think it'll be to the detriment of the team.
Yeah, and that's going to be our segue to the next topic in a second with what's going on in Miami and some trade rumors there. Let me first ask, though, would an extra preseason game have helped clarify anything, or would they just be in the exact same spot?
I mean, I think an extra preseason game would have helped all these quarterback competitions. It's extra week of practice, too, right? I mean, this week of practice, they're really doing nothing, I think, as they move toward kind of this weird cutdown week. So I would give an extra game, extra practice. It wouldn't hurt Fields or Lance or Mac Jones.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk. We're going to get to Mac and maybe Fields later. Let's talk about another team that has to decide who they want their quarterback to be in the long term, sort of trying to win now and build for the future all at once. So there are lots of reports out there over the weekend that Deshaun Watson, the place for him now is Miami, right? And so I guess the Dolphins want multiple first or would have to give up multiple first and second round picks to get Watson. And they don't want to do that yet. Then again, the Texans don't have a lot of leverage here because we don't need to list all the problems with Deshaun Watson right now, but he's got a lot hanging over his head. That their situation there is not clear. And to sum it up, it involves the FBI now. It's not good. So I think I just want to know, like, what's this mean for Tua? Because I don't quite understand what his future is now in Miami if we're really letting this story prolong.
And we're in a situation, too, where the reporter who gave us most of the information, Charles Robinson, called out the Dolphins. It was like, you guys are lying. You have had these discussions. Don't pretend you haven't. I'm very well sourced on this. Don't stop lying about it, essentially, because I guess they were lying about whether they've had contact with Watson. Look, I think the Dolphins understand that Tua probably has some limitations that Deshaun Watson doesn't have. Okay, we're talking about on the field, of course. And anytime you can trade for a top five talent, Tua's not a top five talent. I don't have the size, I don't have the arm. He's never going to be a top five guy, I don't think. Deshaun Watson is a top five player when he's on the field, Gabe. And I think that they would be wise to trade for him. I think a lot of teams, I think 28 teams would trade for Deshaun Watson. The issue, obviously, is that what draft capital do you have to trade for Deshaun Watson? And Houston's asking for an awful lot for a player who's currently in kind of limbo right now. And it feels gross to talk about Deshaun Watson as a player when he has allegations, and multiple of them, of sexual assault against masseuses, right? Like it's something that is having to be discussed because there's trade rumors floating around, right? And because the NFL has done nothing about this. I don't, Gabe, for the life of me, I don't get it, right? For as long as I can remember, Goodell has wanted to be a crime and punishment commissioner, right? He's wanted to be a guy who, if you commit a crime or something, Deflategate, and you get suspended for it, right? I'm gonna crime and punishment you guys. I'm gonna punish everyone. And oftentimes, we've argued this on our show. We've been doing this like 3 years now, I guess, with Zeke Elliott and Jameis Winston and things where guys have been punished. That you punish them against the will of, or the wishes, I should say, of the investigators. You punish them really in not in accordance with the policies you put forward. You punish them before or even after a criminal investigation never happened. And this situation, Gabe, with 20 women accusing Deshaun Watson of something, they've done nothing. They're like, oh, we'll let this play out. Now, possibly because it's on the civil side, not a criminal investigation. That could be one reason why. But leaving him in limbo like this, not putting him on the exempt list, and the Texans saying, like, what Gabe, he's on the roster still. Like, week one, is he just not show up to a facility? Like, what does he do? He was on the roster. They want him to play, but he's not going to play. And they're putting the Texans in a tough spot where the Texans feel like they have to trade him, right? If you put him on the exempt list, he's not going anywhere. It ends up basically ending all trade discussions and keeping the Texans out of the awkward situation of having to trade Deshaun Watson. So I don't know what the NFL is doing here. But yeah, if the Texans are going to trade him, I'd sign up to get him now. 3 firsts and 2 seconds when he could possibly be suspended is never going to happen. But I get why the Dolphins are trying to do this.
Yeah. Now, if we look at the Dolphins specifically. So first of all, I don't understand how they're not completely all in on Tua, given that he didn't even win a QB battle with Ryan Fitzpatrick, but they committed to him anyway and sent Fitzpatrick out of town. So I thought, all right, we're done talking about who the quarterback in Miami is for a little while. They're a pretty good team. They've got a nice enough quarterback. They must like him more than we do if they're willing to keep him around. So here we are again with rumors floating around that they'd be interested in Deshaun. I would argue if Deshaun Watson, again, put aside everything else we don't know about him away from the field, let's just assume he's cleared entirely and we all go back to thinking he's a decent guy. Obviously, he makes the Dolphins the best team in that division. And very quickly, the Dolphins start to become the best team in the AFC with all the pieces they have. So, well, yeah, pull the trigger if you feel like he's an okay guy. Because, I mean, granted, you got to pay him a lot of money the next few years, but he's still mid-20s and quarterbacks are playing into their late 30s. Like, you win a couple Super Bowls with Deshaun Watson if you get him in Miami, right?
I mean, I think that's bold to say a couple Super Bowls. I think they'd be Super Bowl contenders every year with Deshaun Watson. That's why you make the trade, right? And again, if you take away the allegations, I think he might have already been traded. I've said for a while, I don't think the Texans want to trade him. But if they get back the resources they want, they're going to have to do it, right? It seems pretty silly that you wouldn't trade him if you got the offer that you wanted to get. So I don't think it happens now because, again, what are they going to do? They're going to trade for him and then he gets suspended? And it's never going to happen.
You could wait him out and still have all of his prime on your team if you feel comfortable with it morally or ethically
on your team. So here's the thing about waiting this out. And this is, I think, why the NFL has decided to really sit still here. It's because if you put him on the commissioner's exempt list, what triggers him to get off the exempt list, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because these are civil suits, could take years to settle or go to court. So what takes them off the exempt list, right, Gabe? Like, that's part of, I think, why everyone's in limbo right now because, again, if you're the Dolphins and you trade for him and then all of a sudden week one, they're like, commissioner's like, yeah, I don't feel comfortable with Deshaun Watson playing. Exemplist. The earliest he'll be deposed, I heard, is February. It's like he's not even going to get deposed during the season. So and the NFL's in a very awkward spot that they almost traded by being the kind of the punishment league. And I hate to, again, gloss over Deshaun Watson, the allegations, to talk about him as a football player, but this is what we have to do here, right? I think if any team would be wise to trade for him if he gets cleared of all the wrongdoing.
All right. Well, I think it's strange that the Texans reportedly would have no interest in Tua, so that might make that a dead end. For people drafting,
they want to say they want to suck. Like they want to draft a quarterback next year.
Yeah, I don't know who they have their eye on, but yeah, they seem like they've already figured out how to tank and they want to tank some more. Let's talk about a team that tanked pretty effectively a couple of years ago, and then it bit them in the ass last year, but now they get another bite at the apple this year. So Joe Burrow's back, played 3 snaps in the final preseason game of the Bengals. Big brace on his left knee. He thinks he'll be ready to go, but, you know, obviously no one's really sure exactly what we're going to get. That offense, I mean, man, they were moving. When he was out there last year, they were throwing, they were moving, like the pace was up. I don't know, you tell me, can he keep up with the pace of an offense they want there? I think it's 287 days after tearing an ACL and an MCL and doing all kinds of damage to that leg. Can he really get back this quick?
Well, he's going to try to obviously do it, and a lot depends on his offensive line and how they can protect him. You know, decent at tackle, much better left than right tackle. Just traded one of their centers today, so that their center situation, I think, is just okay. Their guards are where the concern is. And when you have a quarterback who has a traumatic leg injury, it takes them a little bit of time to get their rhythm back and to get their confidence back and not get that feeling that, oh, my God, I'm getting hit again. And that's why they kept him out for most of the preseason. So I think Burrow needs to kind of get hit a little bit early on to feel what that feels like, to make sure his body mentally, physically he's ready for it, I think, but mentally be ready for that contact to kind of hit him and get up the next play and get going. Again, I'm not hoping the first play of the game someone takes him out, but I think that at some point in game one, getting hit and getting up afterwards is going to be a good feeling for him. And as far as their team, look, Ja'Marr Chase has had a terrible training camp. Look, Penei Sewell has as well. So the Bengals were kind of maybe screwed either way. They went with this. But I think that Burrow will be fine this year, but it might take up some time, Gabe, to work through some of these issues as he comes back from a major injury. It's a major injury, face of a franchise, some new fun parts, but trying to get through the year confidently that you won't get hurt again. It's really hard to do the first couple of times you're back on the field.
Yeah, and it's probably the worst division you could possibly play in if you don't want to face cold weather and good defenses. I mean, he's going to get a bunch of both playing where he has to play this year.
He really is, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so let me ask you this. This is more just sort of observationally. It seems to me that players have been coming back from these horrible knee and leg injuries faster and with less setbacks than ever before. And I could rattle off a few names, maybe none quite as big as Joe Burrow, but all the time now we're seeing these guys beat their schedules. And I'm curious why you think that is. I mean, has the science just gotten so much better? Are guys taking different levels of risk? Why are players coming back so fast?
Oh, man, the recovery and rehab programs are just so much better now. The technology, the eating, eating is a huge part of this, right? You have to, when you recover, you want to limit your carbs. You want to drink as much. You don't want to take things that, hurt your inflammation, right? Make you more inflamed. So players are just better now at rehab and recovery. And there's technologies now, and everyone has their own personal trainer. And so you're not in the building every day doing it. You're with someone who might not to feel vested in you, because the training staff feels vested in you, but someone just with a different mindset, right? And maybe more aggressive than the team wants to be. And we're bigger, faster, stronger now too. So I think all those factors, you're right. It's pretty remarkable how fast guys come back from injury.
So are we, maybe this is sort of getting into fantasy zone, but this is when drafts are going on. So Burrow's going to be back. You think he'll be fine to start and then maybe quite good once he gets comfortable. What about McCaffrey, Saquon, OBJ? Those are 3 of the other big names.
Yeah, I'm curious about Odell. being back healthy. But look, CMC, Barkley, they're going to get their numbers, even though Barkley really kind of hasn't in his career as far as we thought he would. But CMC will get his. I mean, he definitely will. I think people will be excited for him. You drafted two tight ends your first three rounds, though. That feels very bold.
Yeah, maybe this will help somebody listening. So I was drafting sixth. I have a very weird league. It's not worth explaining the rules. But I was drafting sixth in an eight-person league. I already had Justin Herbert, thank you, Jeff, as my keeper. And I didn't have any running backs I wanted. I wanted Aaron Jones, but Aaron Jones had gone the pick before me. Okay. And so I cut the break line. I was the wild card, and I took Kelsey just to try to start a run and confuse everyone and basically just get control of the draft again because I just didn't have any other better option. But then when the third round came back and Waller was still there, better numbers than any receiver available. Yeah, I took him because I figured I would just totally screw the rest of the league at that position. I don't know if it worked out because now I have crap wide receivers and pretty below average running backs. But do you think I'm getting big numbers out of those two guys?
So who is are you comfortable with the rest of your team?
Well, I got Herbert and Matt Ryan at quarterback. My third, I have Fields eventually when he gets in the game as an option. I got CEH at running back. I did pick him up later in between those two. So who knows? That could be great. You keep tweeting about their line looking good. I'm hoping you're right.
I was finagling into playing fantasy this year, and I'm not like terribly looking forward to it. But
you're an honorary member of my team.
Well, I am, but I actually have my own team this year. So far the name I went with is what Hank suggested, is called Fantasy Football Team. I need to find a more clever name possibly. I'm not very good at these type of things, even though I'm supposed to be smarter than everyone else. It's disappointing, but I'm not good at naming things.
Yeah. For a long time, my team name always had something to do with Tim Tebow. Now it's just Spaghetti and Meatball, which was my nickname for my kids when they popped out.
Spaghetti and Meatball, interesting.
Yeah, was
one thinner, one fatter?
Yeah, one was like, you know, long and skinny, and the other one was kind of a fat little meatball. Now they're just sort of both pretty average. But,
yeah. It's apparent I got that right away. I was like, oh yeah, one's long and lean, the other one's big and fat. Fantasy football, I wish I could get into it, man. I probably should, but I just can't. It's a lot.
Well, you don't have to, Jeff. Let's take a quick break, and we'll talk about something you are into. College football. Week one is insane. It's insane. I finally looked at the schedule. It's way crazier than I ever could have guessed. And I bet people have not yet realized how much is at stake week one. We'll talk about that and a few other NFL topics when we move the line. That's coming up next.
Boom. And there it is. Wireless on the most reliable network nationwide.
That's cool. But with my wireless, I get unlimited for just $30.
Impressive. But does yours have 5G included?
Of course. And my wireless saves me $400 a year.
That's because you all have Xfinity Mobile with your internet. It's wireless so good, it keeps one-upping itself.
$30 per line per month, taxes and fees extra, compares pricing of top carriers. Xfinity internet required. Reduced speeds after 20 gigabits of usage per line. Most reliable based on RootMetrics U.S. report. Results vary. Not an endorsement.
All right, we're back. We're moving the line, our little over-under game. Jeff.
Yes.
How many college football playoff hopefuls will see their season splattered this weekend? Over, under, 1.5. I'll throw a few matchups at you. You'll probably name a few more. But we've got Georgia-Clemson. We've got Bama-Miami. We've got Penn State-Wisconsin. Texas-UNC, a few other teams that people like talking about are out there with decent matchups. Weird weekend to start.
Well, it's not a weird weekend to start. It's a great weekend. That's how it now starts. So Clemson, Georgia, obviously someone has to win that game. So one of those two teams is out. Georgia has a bunch of injuries. Otherwise, I'd feel really comfortable going with them. They have a more experienced quarterback in JT Daniels. Their expectations are much higher this year on them, obviously. But they're just a very quality team. And again, you have the quarterback who is kind of on the rise, where Ongalele could be good, but we saw him play a little bit last year, but this is his first full year starting. So, Georgia's getting 3.5, I think. I kind of like the Bulldogs in this game. But again, someone has to win that game, so whoever doesn't win is now falling behind a little bit. And then the rest of the ones, I mean, the only one upset I could see kind of the upper echelon, and still feels pretty tough, Notre Dame goes to Florida State on Sunday, the 5th, and that game's at 7:30 Eastern. Florida's in year two, I believe, of Mike Norvell. Mackenzie Milton's her quarterback, the kid from UCF who had the terrible leg injury. He's back and playing for Florida State. So, I mean, offensively, should be better at Florida State, but their defense is just not quite there yet, and we'll see. But the Irish are rolling out Jack Cohn at quarterback, who was of Wisconsin fame, I guess fame, lore, whatever you want to say. Ugh, I don't know about that game. I don't know. So that would be a fun game to watch on Sunday. UCLA-LSU, the Bruins off a huge win this past weekend. I need to do some more deep dive on that. I feel good about UCLA actually winning this game and upset. They're getting 4 points right now. I like them before this happened. Quarterback DTR got to be better. He wasn't very good. But their offensive line looked good. Their rushing game looked good. Defensively, I've not seen them that active in a long time. Some credit to Chip Kelly bringing the visor back this weekend.
Mm,
he rocked the visor. Did you see, Gabe, the photo of the Rose Bowl from this past weekend?
You shared a couple of photos. That was my best look at it. It looked pretty sparse.
Is that embarrassing for the Los Angeles crowd?
You know, it's pretty hot. Dodgers are still in season. There's other stuff going on out here. One of the last beach weekends. I can see why there weren't too many people there.
Okay, fair enough. I would say that there still needs to be a lot more. How do you feel about your Trojans taking on the San Jose Spartans?
I'll be there. I'm feeling you pretty will. Good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. A couple touchdown favorite there.
You bring your kids?
I would like to. Apparently, though, I don't think I'm breaking news here. I don't think there's any tailgating on campus. And if you've ever been to, you know, the way the tailgates work over there, it's a lot of it sort of happens on property connected to the university. It's not just like in a parking lot at the Coliseum. Right. So it's hard to – most of the fun is the tailgate in week one, because by halftime it should be over. So I don't know exactly what our plans will be for the game. It'll be over, Jeff. Don't try to throw shade at the Trojans.
San Jose State can play some offense, buddy. Just letting you know.
I wasn't trying to talk about USC, San Jose. There's a couple other games. The Big Ten has a couple matchups. Obviously, we know Ohio State's like the class of the Big Ten, but every other good team in the Big Ten has to play each other this weekend. So that could have some implications on Big Ten champ, which has playoff implications.
Yeah, we got Penn State, Wisconsin, as you mentioned, the marquee game. Iowa, Indiana. Actually, I think Indiana wins that game straight out. They're on the road as dogs. I'll take Indiana plus the points. I think it's at 4. I took them at 4. There's some Texas Tech Houston will be a little Big 12, CUSA action right there or whatever with AAC action below in-state.
I'm never gonna listen action. When we get down to those level. I'm not gonna knows. Learn the conferences. Let me throw one at you that you're for some reason skipping over, and this to me is always evidence that college football is probably broken and never to be fixed. But at a neutral site, Alabama plays Miami. Miami, 14th ranked team in the country going into the year. Alabama in Atlanta favored by 18.5 as of this recording. How is that possible? How can this be college football? They're a 3-score favorite in a neutral site against a ranked team.
Because Miami is not there's a lot of hope for Derek King at quarterback. They took a step forward last year, but Alabama's just that good. Now they have a new quarterback in Bryce Young, but man, they had draftable players at every position. Every position.
I know. The whole first round was them.
That's why. It's that simple. It's a talent thing, right? And I think Alabama, it's hard to bet against Saban in these games. I think they roll Miami.
All right. So to come back to my initial question, over under 1.5 playoff hopeful teams getting their season screwed week one. Do we think that's going to happen to a few teams?
I just think obviously the Clemson Georgia game. Otherwise, I think everyone all the chalk wins.
Chalk wins and no one with a real shot at it loses is what you're telling me.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of losing things, you got a real shot at over under weeks until Cam loses his starting job to Mac Jones. Well, I'm setting it at 4.5. So will he still have the job going into week 5?
It's a good question, man. As well as Mac Jones has played, and he's played well this season. He's done against the twos. I'm not sure he's got any reps with the one offensive line outside maybe the first week he had in one series. I can't see Bill going with Mac Jones anytime soon if he's gave him no reps in the preseason with the ones offense. I think he really believes in Cam, and they're going to go run the football, play action pass. They got the tight ends now. They're going to cram everything in, Gabe. I don't think Mac Jones plays if he doesn't have to all season, honestly.
All season. Okay, so let me... So first of all, for whatever it's worth, and you put a lot of value in these guys, highest PFF passer grade of 45 qualifying quarterbacks in this preseason. A 93 grade for Mac Jones.
Yeah, but again, it's not against the ones.
All right.
And this is what we talked about earlier, right? You have to look at ones versus twos, twos. Now, the process, good, right? It's good. But the next step is doing this against the ones, which we're not going to see because it's not going to play.
All right, so the PFF grade doesn't really do much for you. What about the fact that he had a 69% completion percentage?
Again, I think he did everything he was asked to do, but it just doesn't appear Belichick has given him the opportunity to win this job, and that is pretty important in this discussion. He just hasn't had the opportunity to play with the ones very much. I don't see him going there out of the blue. Now, he hasn't announced a starter yet for week one, so maybe there's a little bit of opening, but I think he had this week where Cam gave him 3 days at practice because Cam had to sit out because of COVID-related concerns. And then who started against the Giants? Cam, and he played with the ones, and then when Mac went in, he played with the twos. And that kind of gives you your answer right there.
I really was just looking for a nice when I said 69, but fair enough. That was a smarter answer.
Sorry.
Jeff Schwartz is smarter than me.
Look, sometimes things catch my eyes. And we talked about Deshaun Watson. A quick update from Aaron Wilson, who used to cover the Texans. He said that the Texans are preparing to have Deshaun Watson on the 53-man roster and inactive every week. So that means he will get paid his salary but not play. So that doesn't really change much of what I said. Just will be awkward with him in the building, I think.
Extremely awkward, unless all of his teammates are cool with him, which probably they are. Let's move along. Over under week 6.5, when Eagles players will adopt the new Mets thumbs down celebration after getting booed by their fans.
As a Mets fan, how does this make you feel?
It took like a week for people to pick up on this. You know, he talked about how I went to the Dodgers-Mets game last week. He did this. He was doing this after he hit a double. And I was like, hey, who's he doing that to? Do Dodgers fans have some specific beef with Javier Baez? And it turns out he was saying it back to, I guess, Mets fans who were booing him in LA. It doesn't make any sense and it doesn't offend me. And I don't know why we're talking about it. Every show talked about it Monday morning. Who cares? I'm a Mets fan and I don't even care.
So the story is Javi Baez and Francisco Lindor and other Mets have played pretty poorly for a while now.
Yeah, basically and, since he came on board.
Yeah, and they were leading the NL East and now they're not. And they're not by a lot of games. And they started doing a celebration when they got a base hit of putting their thumbs down. And Baez came out and said, yeah, we're doing this because we get booed. And so when we do well, we're going to basically boo our fans back.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, grow the freak up. You're being lame. You're a professional athlete. You can't handle a little booing when you're not playing. Well, how many times I've been booed at? You just suck it up and play better. You don't go back to the fans and be almost more respectful if he just put up his middle fingers and said, screw you. Like, I think the fans would appreciate that more. He's going to get endlessly booed. There was a pitch last week when we played the Giants. He swung at the ball. I don't know if you saw this, Gabe. Mm-hmm. The ball was at least 15 feet away from the plate when he started his swing. And his swing path finished and the ball was 7 feet from the plate still. Like, it wasn't even close. Like, you have not been playing well. You are allowed to get booed. Play better, man. Stop being lame. Stop being so sensitive. Grow up.
Yeah, I think he's trying to make sure that he's not in New York for long. And this is a way to do it. Do you think that this type of thing will happen with, I mean, we joked Eagles fans. Who's the worst fan base we expect to see behave this year? Because combination of tough fans and bad team. Eagles set up for
a
failure?
It's always the Eagles. It's always Eagles. Bears fans will do lots of booing this year for Dalton.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of booing. You can't say Raiders fans anymore. They're at a bougie stadium and they're in Vegas now.
Yeah, everyone there is going to be.
So Bears, Eagles.
I think you're going to hear some boos at Giants Stadium or whatever, MetLife.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. MetLife. Oh, for sure.
For both
yeah.
teams, probably. I think both quarterbacks are going to have a hard time this year.
Oh, of course. So you send yourself up for the, oh, I just, oh, my God, Zach Wilson's playing so well. I thought he would suck. That's coming from Gabe.
That's not coming. That won't come. It didn't come when we made the AFC Championship game with Mark Sanchez after I'd been on record saying we needed to bench him. I didn't give in even then.
Wait, you were on record saying they have to bench someone. So that's basically my Baker Mayfield takes. But
yeah,
you did
I was
it
you with, 10 with years Sanchez ago. Watching. They kept game after game marching closer and closer. And then the national media, and I was part of it. I was at ESPN in the newsroom at the time. We're like, Mark Sanchez and the Jets, man, pretty good. And I was like, Mark Sanchez is not pretty good. You are wrong about that. And they made the championship game a couple years, and everyone was convinced he was pretty good. I was like, I'm telling you, he's not. And no one ever listened until like a few years later. They're like, you know, you had been right about that.
So did you convince anyone to say that on television?
At the time, I was working very closely with Colin Cowherd and Michelle Beadle. And I would say I did not convince them.
Oh, well. You convinced all my Baker Mayfield takes are because of Gabe, everyone, just letting you guys know.
Yeah, you're going to own some Baker takes this year. What about your boy Orlovsky talking about Baker's, what Baker's, did he say? Some weird
phrasing.
Yeah,
so I'll pull it up. Yeah, it was interesting. Dan must have been a little bit, feeling a certain way last night. He tweeted out, two reasons why Baker Mayfield isn't replaceable. I'm not sure who was arguing that, but I have at times, I guess. Maybe he's just talking to me. One, he has elite rare ball placement. It's top 5-7 in the NFL. Okay, I guess, in some fantasy land. Two, he's an absolute hose. Now, one would figure that he's talking about his arm, right? That's an analogy for an arm. But then he tweets, as part of the tweet, I should say. So he says, two, has an absolute hose. Space, next line. And you should see his arm. So I don't know if Dan has showered with Baker Mayfield or if there's rumors about Baker Mayfield. I'm not privy to those conversations. But it appears Baker Mayfield makes his wife very happy.
You know, it's not hard for me to believe. Good for you, Bake, or whoever Baker's with. And I don't know how Dan knows that, but hey, he's an expert, so maybe he got tipped off. Let me ask you this, Jeff. Over under 1.5 quarters of Texans-Jags week one, you will watch. Are you going to give that a shot? We at least have Trevor.
So I have three TVs,
yeah,
and my iPad in my room, okay, in my TV room. So I'll put Sunday Ticket on my iPad as well. So one TV goes, typically the big TV in the middle goes with Red Zone, with Andrew Siciliano.
Yeah,
go Red Zone channel.
Of course.
The other two will be a game of my choosing. In the past, it's always been the Chiefs game. Well, I don't have to worry about that as much this year. I'll mm-hmm. still watch them, but probably not, on the screen. The iPad simply for the fourth game or third game, I should say, that I'm basically gambling on. I just want to watch. Otherwise, I wouldn't really watch it. I can assure you, Matt and I are not gambling on that game. So the answer will be, I'll probably watch zero quarters of that game.
Yeah, here's your competition at the 1 o'clock. Seahawks-Colts, definitely a better game. Chargers-Washington, definitely a more interesting game. Vikings-Bengals, I'm not so sure about that one, but we got the Burrow element there. Cardinals-Titans, I know you don't want to watch that. Jets-Panthers, we got a Zach debut and a Darnold reunion, so there's some intrigue there. I mean, the 1 o'clocks aren't that great, Jeff. You might sneak a peek at Trevor Lawrence versus the Texans. Gets better in the afternoon. Dolphins at Pats.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.